Welcome to the Jig Is Up podcast with your hosts, Darcy and Jason. The Jig Is Up is recorded on the traditional lands of the Blackfoot Confederacy, as well as the lands of Treaty 6 Nations. We aim to bring you new perspectives and open up conversations about Métis politics, culture, and current events, as well as stories that affect Indigenous from all over. If you like the show, or you don't, or if you want to send us suggestions for guests or topics to discuss on the show, feel free to email us at metispodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on all of the social media at Métis Podcast. All right, welcome back to The Jig Is Up. Of course, my name is Darcy, and Jason is not joining me tonight, but I am joined by the president of the Métis Federation of Canada, Charlie Fife. And welcome to the show, Charlie.
Hi, how are you doing?
Not bad, not bad. So tell us a little bit about how you kind of got into the position you're in with the Métis Federation.
Okay, long story. So I come from Alberta. I'm from the recognized, what, you know, the group that's recognizing themselves as the only Métis. But what happened was, it had nothing to do with politics. 30 years ago or so, I started researching my family tree. And so within our family, half the family's First Nations, half the family's Métis. What I found during the course of the research was that there's no blood quantum difference. It's a difference of paper and who took treaty. And there was so one group that they lived differently. There was, you know, they didn't live exactly the same. So the folks that were living as First Nations actually, you know, lived as First Nations. We had our own different way. Right. So we had a mixed language. We had, you know, we wore sashes, we danced jigs, that sort of thing. Those cultural differences were more than apparent in the family, but we understood each other. Like when we went to the reserve, it was like, okay, we're going to the farm on Sunday. So, you know, everybody knew each other. Everybody knew they were related.
Right on.
And so I start doing this research because I got really interested in, you know, what happened in the past. During the course of the research, I start finding that we didn't, you know, obviously we didn't start in Red River, right? So the Fife line is a Red River line, but the other lines are northwest, but still Métis.
Okay.
But everybody ends up back in this La Prairie province of Quebec, and about 100 years prior to Red River even being a thought in anyone's head, and it's a community. These folks are Métis. They're living together. So I can't figure out, I'm trying to, you know, what's going on here, building my research and building my database, and all of these family trees end up back there. They all end up in Quebec.
Wow.
In the same community at the St. Regis. They're all baptized at St. Regis mission there and stuff. So it made me curious. And then when I came out here, you know, that was just research. But when I came out here, I started to get politically involved. So I knew Rob. I was in, we were in the Oshawa area, and Oshawa's got a huge Métis community, albeit most of them have moved from the west to Oshawa or from other points in Canada to Oshawa, mostly for GM employment was how they ended up there with the huge Métis community, was most of them work for GM.
Okay.
So Rob was running this group, and I got involved because I am a Métis performer. I perform in Mischief. So I'd go and play at the events, which I did in Alberta too. I've done all over Canada. So I was more artist performer than anything political.
Okay.
But I had a lot of knowledge from the research. And then Rob sort of took ill, and he couldn't continue. And so they had an interim election. So between elections, they had an election, and I end up in the seat of president. And so then we're continuing, we're building our database. And then, of course, there's all this thing about no Métis in the East. Well, there's not only Métis in the East, there's Western Métis in the East too, you know, that just moved over the last 150 years.
Yeah.
They're no longer living where their ancestors did, so they're out here. So my first annoyance was the fact of the rights aren't transferable. So in the Constitution, I have mobility rights, but those, by exercising those mobility rights and moving, whether due to employment or whether due to anything else, all of a sudden I'm out here and I find out I can't harvest. I can't participate in my lifestyle. And that's important to me when I'm a fur trader.
Absolutely,
You know, that's a major thing.
Yeah.
And that's what our family's done for hundreds of years. So anyway, this is the first time I had to encounter it. Here I am in a new province. I'm in a Métis community, accepted by that community, and I can't participate in the harvest. So that sort of burnt me. I was a little bit annoyed with that.
Understandably, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like I don't understand. I still don't understand why, you know, who would negotiate that?
Yeah.
To me, it's absurd. So, you know, thank you very much, whoever did that. But, you know, that's it's not a correct situation. And it's actually a little bit ludicrous when you consider that we were a transitory population. Like the Métis moved in, entire villages would be on these, the road allowance when that was going on, right? There was like entire communities that would be mobile. They'd be pushed along and away they'd go.
Absolutely.
So you had decades where people had, there was births happening the whole time. Some of those births never even got recorded. And then where's the community? The community that was there was tense, so they got pushed on. So there's all these rules all of a sudden. And then they started kicking people out and stuff. And I thought, what the heck's going on here? So I started looking. So what they're doing, they're trying to, there's certain markers that the court said what determines Métis. But basically it's saying, you're not a First Nations and you're not European. So you're tied to the First Nations because you've had a blood mix that happened. And this has to have happened. These communities have to have occurred prior to control. So before there was any kind of effective control, no dates before effective control. So in the West, when you have Red River and this, it's a fantastic history and a wonderful story. But the fact of the matter is it's half the story. So, you know, Red River, wonderful. They've hit all the markers. The court said, rah, rah, we're all, you know, we're Métis out there. But what about these other communities? So I start looking into it. Well, the timeline isn't the same. If you're living in Nova Scotia or New Brunswick, there's communities out there that absolutely meet every marker that the court has set. But the problem is that the timeline doesn't line up. And because you've got, you know, they're calling themselves Métis National Council. So the government's operating in such a way that they actually are the Métis National Council. The problem is they only want to represent that group of people and they don't want to acknowledge these other Métis.
Right.
Now, I'm trying to open up that discussion. I mean, we've put an open hand forward to everybody to try and have some discussion about this, because instead of saying there's no Métis, why don't you look at the people who've done 30 and 40 year research who you know are Métis, now all of a sudden are saying, hold on a minute. Now, instead of just discounting what they're saying without looking at the evidence, why wouldn't you sit to a table and look at the evidence?
Well,
because it's extreme. There's a mountain.
Absolutely. And I find it interesting, too, because like if you listen to a lot of like Métis leaders that are outside of those organizations, or even a lot of Métis locally, just at events and stuff, they all acknowledge that there's Métis in every province all across the country. So it's like, it's just a weird that the organizations don't recognize that, but a lot of the people that I've met do recognize Eastern Métis, Western Métis, Northern Métis. Like, so it's kind of a weird situation there, I think.
You're telling me. I started, okay, so years and years ago, I worked for Canadian Media Guild, and Canadian Media Guild represents all on-air personality for CBC. So I was a union rep. At one point, they were sending me driving out east. I'd go out to the East Coast. So along these journeys, which, you know, driving out there, it takes a while, and we were in no great hurry, and we're stopping at every little radio station to talk to everybody, every little TV station. But on this trip, I ran into very friendly Métis people that would invite me back to dinner at their house or invite us back. You know, the other fellow that was with me was Jerry Whalen. He wasn't Métis, but, you know, if he was with me, he was invited. So people, we were just meeting people. And in general, the East is like that. Like you can go into a town And if you're there a couple of hours, well, who knows, that evening you're probably going to get invited to someone's home for dinner.
Right.
So on this trip, there was 8 or 9 occasions where kitchen parties happened. And it was so reminiscent of home, of being a child at a kitchen party. Those fiddles are going, people are jigging. And you had 3 generations playing the fiddle. Well, there's something about the Métis fiddle, too. There's a extra beat there. There's a very distinct way. When other musicians come to play with Métis musicians for the first time, they find it difficult because there's not the exact same cadence. There's an extra beat in there. These guys are playing the same. They were playing the exact same songs, the exact same way. There's no denying those were Métis communities.
Yeah.
Now, how it got to be, there were slight variations, not in the songs, but in the spoken word.
Mm.
But there's variations. If you look online, there's about 3 different apps that'll teach you, you know, they're trying to teach Mischief. And there's, you know, different types. It just depended on where you were.
Right.
But I think by and large, how that must have happened is through the fur trade, because my ancestors originally coming out of Quebec, it was the mix wasn't the Mischief we're speaking now. That came back with them. Like, their first trip out west was a 2-year trip. By the time they got back to their community, they were speaking a mix instead of a mix of Iroquois and French. It was now a mix of Cree and French because they'd spent 2 years and basically dealing with the Cree. And so there was all kinds of variations in the language too.
Oh yeah.
But it was just very eye-opening, because during the researching, for no reason, nothing to do with politics, just researching, it was more than obvious we started in the East, but we were already a people in the East. We migrated. So that's one difference of opinion. But the fact of the matter is, the historical evidence is there. So it isn't really a logical argument that's being given, say, from David, because he's not willing to acknowledge that even happened. I don't know what he thinks, if there was, you know, people airdropped in there or what, but they did not become Métis in the trip between Quebec and Red River.
Yeah.
They were already Métis. So that was one sort of issue that he can't get around. He doesn't want to admit, but if all your logic and all your thinking and everything you're saying is driven by money instead of truth, well, you know, and I hate to say that, but it's more than obvious that's what's going on. It's not about controlling purity of the nation. It's controlling the resources that are available to the Métis.
Absolutely, yeah.
But that's what it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, the best thing that could happen is we all sit, we say, look, these are the markers, that this is what establishes Métis. And yes, the timeline's different in the East, but they hit every marker. And the fact of the matter is that no matter how it happened, you want to be as different, you know, you want to claim you're as unique as possible. Well, that's fine. Let's investigate how it can be then that the same songs, the same language, the same music, they weren't imitating you. You know, they weren't, you know, oh, we're going to copy the Red River 100 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so, but in knowing that history, if we were able to tell the full story, then you see the migration from the East, and you also see some people interact. I mean, from, you know, the Quebec area, they're going east too. So there's inter-community relations. Mm-hmm. And we were tripping across it all the time. We were just researching our Western roots. But because those families all ended up in Quebec and you're in certain records, you're seeing these other Métis.
For sure.
And, you know, I wasn't recording all that information, but I knew it existed. I kept tripping over it.
Yeah.
And so then it came time to, when Rob wasn't able to continue and I took over there, we sort of said, okay, well, and Rob had already started with this, sort of seeking out communities that we felt met the definition, and then made treaty with these groups.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, I don't know, maybe there is some fake groups out there, but I haven't met any. You know, all the people we've dealt with, we've got good reason to identify them as Métis and accept them as Métis, and that's because they are.
Yeah.
So know, now it's just a matter of if we have to go to court, we will. But court takes a lot of money and a lot of time, whereas the law's already there. The markers that legally make someone entitled to Métis benefit of any sort, it's already there.
Yeah.
We don't have to change anything in the courts. All we got to do is get the government themselves to change policy, because you got Carol Bennett. She's right along with them. I don't know if it's a conspiracy or if she's just not too knowledgeable in the history, because a lot of the stuff, you know, like Chartrand's people must have looked this stuff up by now. So it's being facetious when they pretend that the evidence doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, they must know by now.
I would hope so. Yeah.
You know, yeah. You know, there's a mass amount of evidence. And then even the things like, what are you going to do about all the Western Métis that, you know, are holding script that live in Alberta, like that are connected. I mean, that live in Ontario, family lines that come from Alberta. In our lifetime, most of my family moved here. Well, every single one of our ancestors at the time they did the Métis script, they're all there, of them. My grandparents are there.
Right.
You know, like everybody. So you can't make restitution to one group when it's another group you're owing to.
Oh, for sure.
So, you know, there's all kinds of that going on, too. So it's a big mess, but there is a way to sort of get it straightened out. It would sure be nice, though, if we could all just sit, because you don't have to acknowledge. By sitting at the table, you're not saying, oh, I agree the other person's Métis. By sitting at the table, we can come up with the agreement that what the court said, these are the markers the court set. Therefore, any community that, you know, can hit those markers is part of this nation.
Right.
And then you can build a national governance, because we certainly don't have it now.
Yeah.
And if they're not going to cooperate doing that, then you have to set up two different structures, because you can't allow half the people, less than half the people, to be represented and have rights when they're all entitled.
Well, I think you hit on a really good point earlier when you were talking about even Métis from the West that have moved east, like you said, for whatever reason. Like they're basically left out in the cold. They have no representation, even though they technically are Red River Métis. They still get left out of everything because they happen to be geographically in the East at this time. So
yeah, try and go fishing. you know, it doesn't matter. I could move right into Sault Ste. Marie or one of the communities that Ontario is recognizing, the MNO. I still don't get my harvesting card because I'm not within 150 miles or kilometers or whatever it is of those ancestral territories. So yeah. I'd have to be in Lac St. Anne or St. Albert, on Onway, Notikewin, stuff like that. Like if I'm in those areas where my ancestors historically were, then I'm allowed to hunt and fish and harvest. As soon as I come out here, I could be, you know, I'm participating in the Oshawa community, living there at the time. So we're all living in the same town. There's 2,000 people that are all Métis there, but none of them are from there. They're all migrated there because GM brought them there.
Right.
So everybody found each other when they were there.
Yeah.
And you have a huge community that's being given no sort of rights. And to me, that's absurd.
Absolutely.
You know, so we got more than just the issue of Eastern Métis communities that aren't being recognized that should be. You also have the Western Métis that have moved here and then lost their rights as a result of it.
Absolutely.
Which I just, it's mind boggling.
Well, we've often said on the show here that the government treats Métis rights as though they're privileges. Like you said, they're only valid within a certain geographic area of where your ancestors are from. And it's like, that doesn't even make sense.
No, it just doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. And then when I was looking at even something like this, so one of my ancestors, he was the easiest one to trace because he's recorded his whole life. So at 18, he signs on in Quebec, but he ends up setting up camp in Jasper Valley, and he's back and forth. So it's a 2-year trip. He's back and forth. Then 34 families are with him.
Wow.
And they're coming back and forth the whole time, too.
Yeah.
He's got 3 wives, and I can't remember how many children. At the time of his death, he had over 105 grandchildren, though.
Wow.
You know, three wives at different locations. So they want to tie me to a community. Which community? I've got blood through all three of those lines. They're all from different communities in Canada. He didn't have the families all didn't live at the same place at the same time.
Yeah.
He had different locations. And then so you've got, you know what, they're trying to tie. How could they possibly, but they want to tie me to Lac St. Anne, but really, you know, Lac St. Anne is one of eight communities that it's just impossible to do because it's a moving target.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they tie to these communities that are still there today and saying you have to tie to those communities, it just strikes me as so strange because it was a transitory population. And that was even at the best of times. That was before all that road allowance, you know, the road allowance people and all that.
Oh yeah.
It was a moving population.
Yeah.
And tying your rights, and even, you know, I can understand tying hunting and fishing rights to your traditional territory, but not really. If you're supposed to be a nation, then any of your communities, you should be able to move from BC, Alberta, Saskatchewan, move to Oshawa and have hunting and fishing rights, and hunt, and the Oshawa community should have hunting and fishing rights. Why? Because there's 2,000 Métis living there as a community.
Absolutely.
You know, whether or not they were historically there before, they're sure as heck there now. So, you know, that's something we have to get to, too, is an understanding of it doesn't do us any good exercising rights that are somehow limited by this harness that's connected to a historical location.
Yeah.
You know, and we're living in today. So really those rights should be any, if there's a community existing and you move from a different province to that community, you have every right to participate in the harvest.
Yeah.
So that's what should be happening.
Absolutely. I agree. I think it's a real shame that, you know, for years we've had certain organizations that have basically just kind of allowed that to become the normal and not, I guess, put it more of a fight or, you know, made things more transferable from, you know, technically one province to another kind of thing. Cause like you said, if we're all one nation, then we should act that way. I mean, when you're a Canadian, your charter rights apply, whether you're in Calgary or Quebec or, you know, Newfoundland, well, they're all the same.
You know, Canada makes this big hullabaloo about, you know, it's supposed to be helping us heal and helping us, and you know what our traditional culture was. Well, in our traditional culture, we visited other communities to go and participate in their hunt, you know, or in fishing or whatever. But that's what happened. We would go, you know, a large group of us, just like, you know, the people who went and participated in the buffalo hunt.
Absolutely.
They were from all different, you know, areas. They'd go participate in the one hunt all together. Well, we did that all over wherever our communities were, and sometimes traveling for months to get there to participate in a hunt or fishing, or in some cases a rendezvous. That there was a huge one in Alberta. Sometimes people traveled 3 months to get to the rendezvous. So, you know, there was such a people, and they weren't migrating. They were simply in the course of their business, they were, you know, families with them, and they're going and they're setting up trap lines in certain areas. But when they moved everybody. They didn't leave their, you know, their tents and I'm coming back. So a lot of it is really unfair the way they're trying, you know. We want to recognize and support your right of continuing your culture. But then at the same time, that culture, they're trying to hide it. You know, it's it's typical sort of government, trying to get around obligations, which are only increasing now with the other thing too, the UN thing being signed now.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, that
I've always kind of thought that it's actually, you know, it's such a shame that we have this fight, because really that Eastern Métis kind of early history, it's just absolutely fascinating history. And I kind of feel like, you know, between the government and, you know, the major funded organizations that are out there now, it's like they're really trying to just erase that and pretend that the first couple hundred years of people coming to this land didn't happen. And I just think, well, it's a shame because it's a beautiful history.
That's right. Like, it's a wonderfully woven fabric. The tail would be marvelous. Like, it would so improve. You know, I sit there. I love history. I love Canada's history. I love our history. But to tell the whole story, it changes a lot of things when you're able to tell the whole story. And unfortunately, that's how we get these groups that, if you're taught a false history, if somebody has an agenda and decides, okay, we're going to subvert the history in order that we can end up, you know, being the only group kind of thing, that's a shame if that's allowed to happen, because there's a really rich story there that's all interconnected, including the Western Métis, what they consider themselves Western Métis.
Mm-hmm.
But if they knew the whole story, there's no Western, there's no Eastern, it's just Métis. And I'd like to get it to that point of understanding, but it's having people sit to a table and actually listen with open arms and or open heart and look at what's being presented too, because there's a lot of evidence. And if all you're going to do is say, nope, you don't exist and not even look, then to me, that's not government. Those are private clubs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's important that, I think the government's done a really good job over its history of dividing Indigenous people in general, just doing everything it can to divide and conquer. And I think now is like, it's a fantastic time to start bringing people together. And, you know, one of the things that I always notice with some organizations is it's more about power and control. Whereas the one thing that I do like about the MFC when I started getting to know Robert and the organization was, it wasn't about taking over anybody else. It was about combining to kind of build a coalition more than anything.
Well, because there's so much problem with the way MNC is doing things that we know that doesn't work. And what would work? Well, have it community driven. So identify all your communities and what their needs are, and then deal with it that way, where you can work together. There can be a structure that works as a national sort of structure,
mm-hmm.
with the interest, the community interests actually being taken care of, because now we've got so many levels of government, it's getting ridiculous. So you've got, the main councils that I think are the most important would be like the Oshawa Council, and then it became a Durham Region Council because it kept getting bigger and bigger, and nobody, actually, not all of them are in Oshawa proper, so Durham Region. So you'd need, those communities have to be recognized and strengthened so that they're able to speak for themselves kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then you create your national structure. But the most important thing, like where all these people are flipping out right now, oh, the MNC's falling apart and you're hurting the Métis Nation. Well, it isn't. As long as your groups are intact, which they are, MNO's intact.
Yeah.
Saskatchewan's intact. Alberta's intact. They can operate as they are without this supposed national structure, because that's what I think was really hurting us, was that.
Yeah.
So there's two things we could do that would in the immediate future that we could do to move this along, and that would be to, for us to sit down and agree to the, you know, there's more Métis than just us. Here's why. Here's the markers that Canada set. Here's what the court said. Here's the communities in the East. Now, obviously, we have Métis across Canada. If we can at least agree to that, and then we have the communities identified, then, you know, we don't have to work together after that. If they want to do two different governments and both going to the government, both dealing with Canada independently for funding, they can do that. But that to me is foolishness.
Yeah.
Because it's the same, you know, whether you want to deny it right now or not, but after you look at the evidence and it becomes more than apparent that the Métis are the Métis, it's one people, then it becomes ridiculous to try and separate into two governments.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely. So, and I don't really understand, I understand the structure of the MNC and the provincial ones, but to be honest, the what the MNC does is very limited. Like, they're not a program service provider. They don't issue membership cards themselves. So it's kind of like a redundant level of what they call government. And I wonder how much government do Métis people need?
You know? Yeah, because it might be that that's all you need. Like, but then you have another problem is that you've got Métis Nation Alberta, Métis Federation, Manitoba Métis Federation. They all have their little independent membership rules and through which they disclude certain people.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You either represent everybody or you're not a government.
Exactly.
You know, and then if everybody wants to do that, well, fine. Then we'll all be political parties, and let's have an election for a national government. You can run your run your candidates for the platforms, and you know, that's what we need to do, something like that. If they want to all be this, you know, that way.
Yeah.
But it would be so much easier to just work together, like sit at the table, see why all these people that you know, because that's the thing that really annoys me too, is when nobody's listening. Or discounting what you're saying. Well, you know what? During that 30 years research, how many people and how many communities came to me because they needed research? And this is in the West. So if I was dependable then and you trusted me then, why aren't you trusting me now?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good point.
The same person coming forward. So if I was if I had credibility when I was in the West, and all of a sudden I'm saying something that you don't like hearing, but I'm saying it, then maybe you should look at who's saying it and say, okay, well, there's got to be something there.
Absolutely.
You know, so granted, on the other hand, you have, you know, buddy over there saying we don't exist out here. So,
yeah,
you know, it's hard for people to tell because if your leader is being dishonest with you and you have no idea, you're just a follower and somebody's, you know, pulling the wool over your eyes. Well, I can understand why this is going the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe we have to just start having the conversation in public. He seemed a little worried about that we were speaking about any of this stuff in public. You know, you're just trying to embarrass and, you know, air the dirty laundry. Not really. We're trying to spark a conversation. If he'd have said, let's all have a meeting on Friday, you know, meet in Ottawa and blah, 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 that meeting would have happened. But these guys don't want to meet. Bennett's so secure that they're going to be secure that she's trying not to meet. But that's all coming apart everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start producing evidence and showing it to people in the right places, and they start understanding what you're saying to be true. And then you've got other people that are standing there lying, and they know they're lying.
Yeah.
Then it becomes kind of ridiculous. You start losing any credibility. So those guys, when they're attacking me, should be very careful what they're saying, because I'm showing the evidence to MPs and MPPs and other people in government.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I'm saying something, I'm not just saying it. I'm saying it because I can prove it.
Absolutely.
So then when they're, you know, making ridiculous counter statements, they should be very, very careful what they say.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can be guaranteed I'll have not only information to back up what I'm saying, but a lot of times I have their information.
Yeah.
You know, on the very dangerous situation if you're going to lie. Just at least come forward and confront it if you want to confront it. But, you know, what do? You're attacking because it might cost you control of funding. That's the only thing I can think.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
And it shouldn't be that way. If everything was working properly, then the right funding would go to the right places. And
I think too, like I've noticed, it seems we get mirrored down and bogged down in this conversation of who is and who's not. But at the end of the day, you know what, I think what any Métis person in a position like yours wants is better life for Métis people. You know, whether that's some housing help or more scholarships or whatever, like it's not about, you know, necessarily getting, you know, yourself paid a huge amount of money. It's about making life better for Métis across the country. And I think that's the conversation that I don't know if it's being purposely avoided by certain people to retain power and funding, but like that's, to me, that's what it's all about. It's not necessarily about power. It's about what can we all provide. And I think, like you said, when you sit down with people and actually have a conversation, I think it becomes very clear very quickly that you all want the same thing. You know, even on a community level or you know, whatever, but you kind of all want the same thing. You want the best for each other, you know?
You would certainly hope so.
Yeah.
You know, you would certainly hope so, because that this shouldn't even, money shouldn't even enter into the conversation. It's just the world we're in and the situation we're in, because if we were dealing strictly on the identity issue and there was no perceived pot of gold there, and we were just dealing strictly with the identity issue, there wouldn't even be a problem, because you'd be able to show your evidence without people worrying that they're going to lose control of X number of dollars. And that's exactly what's going on.
Yep.
It's got nothing to do with reality. The files are there. All somebody's got to do is look at them, you know, and then that's the end of story. It becomes obvious that what we're saying is true. There's Métis from coast to coast to coast. There's historical Métis communities, east and west. There's, you know, slightly different experiences, but there's also some land stuff that happened in the east too. I'm not real up on it, but I've been sort of reading up on some stuff there too.
Yeah.
And so there's all kinds of things that happened everywhere.
Absolutely.
And I think as Métis, if we can work together, we obviously are going to get way further than trying to work individually. And if we have to, that's what'll happen. Like, it'll just be all these different community groups that'll go to the government to negotiate for this or that or the other thing. But that's kind of like pulling teeth.
Right.
And it would be so much better to have a proper national structure that everybody was participating in and have it be community driven. Like, you don't want the control at the top. Well, some people do, but
the whole thing,
like, the, you know, if you're living in New Brunswick in a Métis community, you know the needs of your community. So you might not need health and wellness funding, but you might need help for seniors there, or you might need, you know, it's a community with a lot. So they need, you know, looking for grant money or that type of thing.
Yeah.
It's available in the West. And see, that's something else too, is the government seems to think that by letting MNC do their dirty work to sort of say you're not Métis, that somehow lets them off the hook. Well, no, the fiduciary duty is still there.
Absolutely.
So if they want to deal with us all as separate entities too, well, you keep going the way you're going and you're going to end up dealing with 100 different groups.
Yeah.
You know, instead of, because she's out there praising LaRue and everything else. That's another foolish thing, because he's on the verge of slander, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And half the he crosses that line every once in a while, too.
Well, so, and I've always wondered how a guy who doesn't identify as Métis but makes a living off of Métis identity is allowed to continue to do that. I mean, I've often said on the show, if he decided to read a lot of books about being Blackfoot and came out to Treaty 7 here and Blackfoot Confederacy and decided to tell people who's Blackfoot and who's not, he'd get run out of town.
Yeah.
But yet, for some reason, I think because it fits a narrative for some people, he's allowed to continue doing what he does, and I think it's ridiculous.
I think he's paid to do what he does.
Absolutely.
I think there's the actual funding that's coming, whether it's an outright check, because he's made that joke too. Oh, yeah, cashed the check yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so...
I mean, I just kind of look at him like a new version of an Indian agent, where he's benefiting off of an indigenous issue and indigenous people.
He's made a living off it the last couple of years, off attacking an indigenous group. It's crazy.
Yeah. And for some reason, it's okay.
Well, yeah, because it's following a narrative.
Yeah.
It's just mind boggling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So what, you know, when it comes to the Métis Federation, like, what are some of the things that you guys are, is there something you're working on right now or anything that, because I know you've brought a lot of new people in and you're doing a bunch of things and kind of supporting people doing what they're doing. So is there anything specific that you maybe wanted to talk about here? Or?
Well, there's an ongoing effort, the 60 scoop effort, and that's Catherine LaGrange is dealing with that. And puts a lot of time and effort into that. We fully support that.
Yeah, she does great work.
And oh yeah, that's been really good. Other than that, dealing with government, trying to identify, because we're still researching to see Eastern communities where, you know, looking at all that still going on, like all this research is still going on. And because there's no money, so everybody who's committee members all, you know, you're hands on, all right, you're full time, you know, and everybody, there's every, the rest of them are younger than I am, so they're all working, but try and work a full time job and do this at the same time, it gets going pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll go around. I've done a lot of visits with MPs, with MPPs, sort of directly talking about our issues. A lot of outreach to First Nations that I do business with, and communally, like speaking to elders and just the traditional community, mostly the powwow communities, because that's the people that I know.
Yeah.
Building those bridges, because I think that's more important than our relationship with Canada. We sort of got a three-tier thing we got to take care of here. And if we're talking reconciliation, would be reconciliation with ourselves, then with First Nations, then with Canada.
Absolutely.
And that's order of importance that I see it too, because there's all kinds of issues with if we're going to be expecting something from some kind of land resources that are coming out, and like what's been going on in the West, shouldn't we be at least dealing with the First Nations? I mean, it's their territories that we're on, and I don't care where you are in Canada, you're on some First Nations territories.
Absolutely.
So it's important to me that those relationships are kept healthy, and they're starting to be good relationships. Like, we're, our relationship's always sort of been good with them, but the Métis relationship in general, there's some animosity there because of some of the stuff that's gone on out West.
Well, absolutely. So, I think, you know, you have people like David Chartrand telling, you know, Manitoba chiefs that you guys don't own the land. And they, you know, even here in Alberta, I know they never even attempt to work with or consult with any of the First Nations out here in Alberta. They just do whatever they want, and it's good. And I think that I've always thought that is an absolute shameful way to do things. So I'm glad to hear you saying what you're saying about that.
Yeah, like there's lots of sort of things that we're going to have to address as we're building our nation, because I really see it that way. I see it as sort of chasing nationhood, because it isn't there. It is. I don't care who says, yeah, you know, Canada, you know, there's a Métis national government and I'm a citizen of. Well, the fact of the matter is there isn't, and you aren't.
Yeah.
you're Métis, you're self-identified. The way they set it up was just terrible, but that's okay. It's still, it's a dealable situation, but we got to get some sane people.
Absolutely.
And you can't have people every time when you go and show them evidence or bring them to a different understanding, shoving their head in the sand instead of looking at what you're saying or showing. And that's what's been going on, and it's been going on far too long.
Yeah.
So now we're going, instead of trying to go to those people, we're going to everybody else. So
right on.
Making treaty with those communities that we found. And there's a lot of groups, like there's a lot of stuff going on, and it would be to everybody's benefit if we could just have everyone sort of sit at the table to have the conversation. I'm not asking them to identify who the Métis communities are in the East. I'm just saying this is how we're going to identify those Métis communities, or how we are identifying. And it's exactly the way the court. You have certain markers that are there. It's a pre-existing community that's before the control, and it's not First Nations, and it's mm-hmm. not the European. It's a different, you know, they're distinct to themselves. Well, then there you go. There's a historic Métis community, and there's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah,
it's not like we have to look too hard. We started, you know, tripping across them. It was like, okay, like
yeah, exactly.
So, and you know what? I was reading a book the other day. I should have looked it up for the interview, but it's old research. And the lady was talking about what was going on with the Métis, and at the time she said she feared that the situation would be abused to try and create exactly what happened, that there's a Western Métis group claiming they're the only Métis, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to find that research, and then the next conversation we have, we'll go over that.
For sure.
Because it's interesting finding stuff that that somebody was saying could happen, and then it does happen.
Yeah.
And, yeah, some interesting things there, because there's enough stuff glaringly apparent to show that there's an awareness that there is more than those Métis.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they actually believe that those are the only Métis. Bennett, there's no way.
Yeah, no.
You know, they're sitting on a bunch of files there that they know better, despite what they do about moving files around. You know, all those databases 20 years ago, you could just, you know, get online and maybe not even 20, 15 years, 10 years, probably even. And all those databases you could access into everything, and yeah, birth certificates and priest records and everything else. You'd
for
be
sure
able to get it online. And then they started moving databases around or making it a closed, restricted, you know, all these files that are restricted now. None of that used to happen. And it's all to counter, you know, okay, you guys, you got to self-identify. Quick, hide the files. You know, and then that whole Western database that professor from University of Alberta had, and they destroyed that database. But we'd already downloaded it. Like, we've been working on the thing for 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, and every time you find a relevant piece, you're downloading it, printing it out. You know, it's not like we didn't already have it. So, yeah, have at her.
Yeah, exactly.
Now all that meant to me was, it doesn't mean the evidence doesn't exist, because we have it. All that means is our database is bigger than yours, or more qualified than yours.
Yeah,
if
absolutely
you've been destroying files and we've been collecting them before you destroyed them, well, then now we have a better database than yours. That's the way I look at it anyway, because ours is pretty good.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know.
Well, I think the, you know, the government, I mean, all of this identity issue within the Métis community, I think, plays really well into the government's ability to not, like, to not shoulder any of the responsibility. Like, they can kind of go, well, see, there's just a little bit of Métis. There's not a lot. And I think it works really well for them.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and then he keeps screaming about all the money that it's going to cost him. Well, look, that's kind of a fallacy. For one thing, if all of a sudden you recognized all the Métis in Canada, you think people are going to run around and start hunt that didn't hunt before and fish before and collect medicines or harvest out of the forest before? You think they're all going to start doing that tomorrow?
Yeah.
I doubt it.
I doubt it.
You know, I can't see it. So that's not going to cost them the hundreds of millions that they're trying to portray it to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not going to happen. It's not a reality. And most of these people, all they're looking for is their recognition. They just want to have their identity and celebrate who they are. That's it.
Well, and I find that people want to feel like they are part of something. You know, like, they want that recognition of who they are and that they're part of something. And that's really the biggest reason. Like, when people even that I know that do get their Métis Nation of Alberta cards, like, it's not the card. Like, they don't get anything from getting the actual card. They get nothing other than maybe some access to some scholarships for kids or something. But the reality is they get a card in the mail. But it's the fact that now they feel like they're connected to something. And they feel like they know who they are now. And I think that's the important thing that people are forgetting in all of this.
And that's an interesting point, because the one thing I hate to see, what will a Métis card get me?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I'll say, well, it gets you nothing.
Yeah.
because it annoys me. The question annoys me. You get your identity. You get to know who you are. You
absolutely
get to know your history. You get to know your ancestors.
Yes.
You get to know the teachings of the people that came before you. You know, it's a sad sort of situation when everything is tied to money. It starts driving me a little crazy.
For sure.
What, you know, do we get gas cards? No. What? I don't know if you saw any of my posts in the last week, but I'll address it if it comes up. So I had to explain the difference between a Métis card and a status card.
Mm.
And a lot of people didn't get it. And yeah, a lot of people didn't like it. Like they didn't like being told at no point are you ever, even if we identify the Eastern communities, you are still not going to have status the way a First Nations had status. There's a difference. There's a reason that they have status.
Yeah.
So anything that you have rights wise is it's not about being equal to First Nations.
Yeah.
It's about being fair to the Métis people.
That's right.
And so there's a big difference, and they got to understand that too, because you the last thing you want to do is be trying to bully First Nations into, you know, situations or even just go behind their backs. That sort of behavior can't be going on. We got to be able to work with them first, and you know, when we go on their territories, give that acknowledgement.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, I'm even for hunting and fishing, it was done wrong. It should have been the Métis should have been negotiating to harvest, hunt, fish, whatever, hand in hand with the First Nations. And that's who, had I been the fella in charge, I would have been speaking to them. I wouldn't have been talking to Canada. I would have first gone to the First Nations, then gone with them to Canada and said, look, this is what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Because those rights are there. We are entitled to those rights, but those rights are there. Like, those are our rights. Those aren't, it's not a gift from Canada.
Yeah.
It's just Canada acknowledging that we have those rights.
Yeah.
But somehow our rights have, it seems like it's not, whoever been negotiating the wrong direction, you know,
because
it transferable rights. That's one thing I don't even understand how it could have happened as it's a transitory population to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, and then trying to tie people's identities and their rights to that, to these communities. You know what we live in today? I'm more concerned with the modern day communities than I am with these ones in the past.
Yeah.
Well, and then another thing is, what's community? There's all kinds of different definitions of community.
Yep.
They're trying to stick with a physical location of a township type community, but that's not the Métis. So if all things were regarded fairly, we wouldn't have any trouble with the way the rulings have been set or anything else. It's just the interpretation. And then after that interpretation, it's the policy. It's how CERNA's conducting themselves.
Yeah.
But the rules are already there. All we have to have is some acknowledgement that we exist. It's just crazy.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy hearing you talk about is the idea of working together with First Nations first. You know, like I've said what you just said about harvesting rights and fishing and all that kind of stuff for a long time, that why don't we start approaching First Nations? And it, because then it gets really easy. It gets much easier for the government, or for us to go to government together, than it does to go as a fractured, you know, little groups here and there. I think the government's easier for them to keep everybody confused.
Well, it's politically correct too. It shows the respect. It shows that we're respecting that First Nation.
Mm-hmm.
To not do that, to me, it's you're slapping someone in the face. It's taken as an insult, because it is an insult to me. That's the very first thing that one of the very first things we should be attempting to correct is that.
Well, I think it's important to, you know, for you to be saying this, because I think, you know, there's certain people, individuals out there that are academics that are making money off this issue, and they like to say the MFC is trying to, you know, steal people's rights and, you know, take over territories, and, you know, they're just trying to be more colonizers out east and steal all the rights from First Nations. But I kind of feel like it's the opposite, where it's the MNC that's actually doing that, because they don't work with First Nations on almost anything. And they don't care to. They don't want to. They've openly said that, you know, you guys don't own the land. You guys don't. We're our own people. You don't care about what you guys are doing. And so I think it's really, I'm just glad to hear. It's refreshing to hear somebody else, you know, in a position like yours to say these things. So I think that's really awesome.
I just think that the Métis Nation has got off on a real bad foot, because you had the wrong people speaking. You had the wrong person in the driver's seat. And that's how come everybody's not happy. you can bet First Nations are not happy with MNC.
Oh, yeah.
And the Métis people, if you were to look at the overall population and how happy, you know, there'll be a certain group that is happy with them, but the majority of the Métis people aren't happy with them.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, because it's been a very self-serving, you know, the amount, I mean, I hate using the word corruption, but it's corruption.
Oh, totally. You know, absolutely.
You know, and then everything comes out backwards. And then lately, like this week, him, he kept talking about in the apology to the MNC. And I'm like, wow, this guy, like his name's not David anymore. It's MNC because he's demanding this apology.
Yeah.
But the people he's demanding apology from, without those people, there is no MNC.
Exactly.
So, you know, I kept reading, he's demanding that they give the apology to the MNC, but they are the MNC, or they were the MNC. Like, they were the, if there's only five of you at the table and three of you get up and leave, then that's it. It's done.
Exactly. You know? What I found really funny is I read that they made a statement and he said that, the MNC said that these three groups are now appropriating Métis culture. And I thought, well, how do Métis people appropriate Métis culture?
I'll tell you this. They're lucky there's no blood quantum, because if it did come down to blood quantum, there's a whole lot of people that you know, you want to get into who's more Métis. And I try and stay away from that, because there is no blood quantum for Métis.
Yeah.
So they keep, I can't remember what I read on their site, something about five lines back or whatever, and I'm thinking, five lines back, I go to my parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't gotta go digging to 1600s to go looking to see who's Métis. So if I'm saying that these other people are Métis and this guy is up there, well, maybe everybody should lay their pedigrees on the table here and see who's talking. Because if you're the guy who's got one grandparent that's back five generations ago, and you're the one telling everyone else they're not Métis, perhaps you shouldn't be speaking. You know, I exactly. hate to be blunt, but you know.
Well, I think it goes to the idea that I've noticed for a long time is that we tend to be going through this. We're turning over the right to determine who we are to people that are academics, like LaRue, who's not Métis, but you know, he's read a lot of books about it. But we're
not an academic either.
Yeah. But we're kind of forgetting that there's elders out there that are telling us who is Métis. And they're very clear on the issue. And everybody's ignoring them and going to these academics. And it's like, I think that's the reverse of what we should be doing here.
Well, I'll tell you, 30 years researching my family, and the other day I learned something new. And it was from my aunt, who just happened to, the conversation came up, and she said something, and in 30 years research, and it was a key thing, wasn't a little thing. It was a key thing.
Wow.
That explained a lot of history that followed over the next few decades. It was really a big deal, and it was nowhere written down in all the history. And when she said it, so much made sense. It was mind-boggling.
Yeah.
So if we don't give our elders, our real elders too, I'm not talking about, you know, some of these elders that they've got are elected elders.
Yeah.
They're elder people who are Métis, but elders more than that. You have to carry a traditional knowledge. If you don't carry the traditional knowledge and the oral histories, you're not really an elder.
Yeah.
You know, you're an elderly person who's part of the community.
Yeah.
But I did notice that a lot. I've met a lot of elders who aren't, and a lot of elders that aren't recognized as such.
For sure.
So it's almost like when you go into First Nations and you've got the elected councils that is a Government of Canada production going on, and you've got the hereditary councils, different thing.
Absolutely.
And so that same sort of situation we've got going here, and it's a little disturbing, because if some of those people were given voice and were able to speak and tell their stories and tell what they knew, tell the history that they know, then you'd start finding out that, you know what, there was communication and there was interaction between these Eastern communities and Red River, between these Eastern communities and the Northwest, that it wasn't just an earlier timeline. It was an earlier timeline that created the Métis that is, in fact, their timeline's wrong, the Western timeline. Like, yes, that's when the control took over and all that. But as far as Métis existing before that, they certainly did. Everybody migrated.
Absolutely.
Out there. And it's, yeah, it doesn't distract. See, that's the thing, is everyone's now, you know, I'm attacking their culture, their history. No, I'm not. Because we're all one people to begin with. I'm trying to teach you your history. I'm trying to teach you the other half of what happened.
Yeah.
Because they don't seem to, nobody wants to go back that far. They all want to stop at, you know, if you go and you punch in Red River Métis, and they got that database on there. But I would suggest to any Métis, any Western Métis, start doing your family tree, go back as far as you can, and then go two more generations, see where you end up. You're going to be in La Prairie, Quebec, or you're going to be in Villeneuve, Quebec, or you're going to be in any of these Métis communities. Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe me, just take your own tree. If you're a Red River Métis, take your own tree, follow it back to Quebec, then take your buddy's tree, see if he isn't your neighbor.
Yeah,
that's absolutely the thing, right? It would have been different had it been only my family, but it wasn't. And when I went and started looking, it was everybody's families are there.
Oh, for
and
sure.
I'm like, okay, well, if we're all here 100 years before Red River was even thought of, then, you know.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense.
Absolutely.
I understand how it came to be because of that effective control. And they sort of, you know, well, when the RCMP was out there, that was effective control. At that point, it's effective control.
Yeah.
So that plays to all their timeline. And it's a much earlier timeline in the East. And there's varying timelines, too, from Quebec to Nova Scotia, New Brunswick. It's not all the same exact timeline when effective control would take complete. And even though in some cases it'd have to be argued, they shouldn't have to be, because we can identify who they are. But, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You shouldn't. It's the only race on the earth where you got to prove. And it's, to me, it's nuts.
It is.
Like if you're Jewish and you're living in Israel and you move, you're still Jewish when you move somewhere else.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter where you move, you're still Jewish.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I really don't understand that, how that got to be that way.
Yeah, and it is unfortunate. It is very unfortunate. So I guess, you know, we're getting kind of wrapped up here. I don't know if there's anything that, you know, I don't know if there's any announcements or anything that's kind of happening coming up soon, or events or something like that maybe you want to talk about, or.
Well, we have an election coming up pretty quick, an AGA, an election, all that'll be happening. Not really quick, but there's an AGA happening pretty quick. I don't have the dates yet, but we're setting the dates. It's going to be soon.
Okay.
So there'll be some big meetings. We're still talking with government. There'll be some things happening pretty quick, actually. We're going to do an announcement pretty soon, and it's trying to address this. We're still trying to get everybody to one table, which, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of things going on.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we're just in, you know, mid-stride here, because there's so much going on, and it's a daily sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the thing, right? It's hard to say there's one thing happening when there's 30 things going on at all times. And but I just,
well, here's something else too, is because it's being treated as open warfare. When, like, I have a lot of people getting upset because I'm not posting updates on Métis Federation Canada site, or I'm not not updating everybody, but we can. There's, because if you have an effort underway that some other group thinks they can undermine, and you've let them know that you're doing it before it's secured, then they're going to be trying to undermine or circumvent that from ever happening. Whereas if you have it secured first, and whatever's happening is all, it's going to happen no matter what, then you can put it all over Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
But so there's a lot of stuff going on that we can't say anything about, because until we actually have, you know, until it's a secure situation, we can't reveal it.
For sure.
Because otherwise we have somebody undermining us at every turn.
Absolutely.
So a lot of it's that. It's not that we're trying to be behind closed doors or anything. It's just that it's almost a war council the way we're having to conduct ourselves right now.
For sure. For sure. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, and I know we're going to try to make this more of a regular thing. So certainly look forward to having you back on the show. But yeah, I think the message, and I think it's important that people hear straight from, you know, straight from the source of the message, exactly what the MFC stands for. So I really, really thank you for coming on.
Yeah. And I hope, you know, I'm hoping to make that message heard to the Métis everywhere, especially the Western Métis. Nobody's trying to destroy or take away from that historical experience, which it's a wonderful story. It's a wonderful part of our history. But let's hear the whole history, because there's some really fantastic stories to the East, too. And there's a earlier history than they've been taught.
Yeah.
And it would sure be nice to be able to teach that history, not just to the other Métis, not just so the Métis Nation knows who they are, but so Canada knows who they are.
Absolutely.
It's important to the story. Yes. Just as important as the Western Métis were important to the story, so is the Eastern communities and their contribution to what happened.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. I think we're in a good position. I don't think anyone should be worried, you know, because I see a lot of fear out there, and people are trying to spread fear. But if you're in a secure community group, and to those who aren't, I would say this, your community groups are more important than the organizations you belong to.
Absolutely.
Your community group above all.
Yeah.
So if you're a member of Métis Federation Canada, if you're a member of MNC, MNO, any of these groups, it doesn't matter. Your community is what matters most.
Yeah.
Because that's where your rights are going to come into play. And we're going to get there. We're going to get to that point, because it's the modern day communities. That's, I don't care where my ancestors lived 150 years ago. I live today. I got to eat today. So if how I live is harvesting, and I moved to Oshawa from Alberta, that community, I should be able to join it and have my same harvesting rights there.
Absolutely.
That has to be addressed. We will be, but there'll be all kinds of good things happening. Like right now, there's so much movement, and everybody's all, you know, what's going on? What's going on? It's all for the good.
Yeah.
It might not be all for the good for the MNC, but it's for the Métis people. It's all for the good.
Right.
We're moving the right direction.
Well, that is definitely refreshing to hear, because I think right now, especially, there's a lot of negativity, but I do have a lot of hope that there is, because I see a lot of other communities that are starting to kind of wake up and break away from this, you know, this lens that they've been stuck in for 30 some years, and realizing that, you know, there's more to this story than what we've been told. So really refreshing to hear, and I really appreciate you coming on.
I think it's going to be an exciting year for everybody.
Absolutely.
No matter where, if you're Métis and you're living in Canada, it's going to be an exciting year. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on, and, you know, don't get depressed. Don't get down. It doesn't matter if you're in the East Coast right now and you think you're never going to get recognized. Don't think that way. We're moving ahead. People are keeping you in mind. People have your well-being in their hearts.
Absolutely.
So we're going to get somewhere here.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to the next time we chat, which hopefully will be in, you know, maybe a month or month and a half or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. I'll come back anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Charlie.
All right. Thanks.
You bet.
Have a good night.
You too.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, there you have it. That was a fantastic conversation. There was a lot of things in there that I really enjoyed hearing, and it's really refreshing to hear from somebody in a position of, you know, president of an organization, Métis organization. And I hope that dispels maybe some of the false narratives that you've heard about the MFC. I think it was very refreshing. So I really am glad Charlie came on, and I'm hoping we can have him on again more regularly, just to kind of keep us updated as to what they're doing. I have to apologize for my voice tonight. I have a little bit of a cold, but I guess for now that's all I got. I know we got some more great shows coming up. Jason's got some interviews he's lining up. We're going to be coming together here in a week or two to do another episode, but with the two of us. So that's something to look forward to. And yeah, I hope you guys have a great week and enjoy this episode. And thanks for listening. And for now, the jig is up.